بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين، ومن تبعهم بإحسان إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، فحياكم الله جميعا، طبتم وطاب سعيكم وممشاكم، ولقد تبوأتم من الجنة منزلا. السلام عليكم again to all of you, and congratulations, and I give you the good tidings of attending the Halaqas of Knowledge, within which the angels send down their mercy and their blessing, inshaAllah ta'ala. Today is going to be the 45th class in the classes on the fiqh of tahara, purification and wudu. And we have a new hadith today, and it's going to bring us into a very important subject, inshaAllah ta'ala. So I'll start by reading the hadith in Arabic, the translation, and then we'll talk about the commentary that the scholars made on the hadith. عن عائشة رضي الله عنها أن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم قال من أصابه قي أو رعاف أو قلص أو مذي فلينصرف فليتوضأ ثم لا يبني على صلاته وهو في ذلك لا يتكلم. أخرجه ابن ماجه وضعفه إمام أحمد وغيره. This hadith was narrated by the mother of the believers, Aisha, may Allah be pleased with her. She says that the Prophet ﷺ said, whoever vomits or has a nosebleed or has the reflux of the food, it's called qalas in Arabic, or releases the madhi, the pre-seminal fluid, then he should go and perform wudu. Then he should go away and then perform wudu, then complete his salah or build on his salah, as long as or on the condition that he did not speak during that time. When he went to make wudu and return, he can come back and build on his salah according to this narration. And this hadith was narrated by Ibn Majah, and it was considered weak by Imam Ahmad. So this hadith, to start off with, it's a hadith that is problematic. Some of the scholars, they differed about its authenticity, which we'll talk about in the end, but it's a little bit problematic, and we'll explain a little bit about it, inshallah. Aisha radiallahu anhu, she says that the Prophet ﷺ said, whoever vomits or has a nosebleed or has a reflux or has the madhi, these four things, they have to go and make wudu. This hadith is teaching us about four things that would break the wudu. We talked about the madhi before, the pre-seminal fluid, that Ali, the hadith of Ali, if you recall, that he said he had a lot of the pre-seminal fluid, the fluid that comes out slowly when a person, they have thoughts about their wife or they have intimate touching, then that fluid comes out slowly. That is something that breaks the wudu. That's called the madhi. The madhi. It's a clear fluid that comes out slowly a little bit, and that one has to wash it and make a wudu, but there's no ghusl. There's no washing from that fluid. We talked about that in a previous lesson. This hadith is bringing three new things that we haven't spoken about before. The vomiting, does vomiting break the wudu? And the nosebleed or bleeding in general, does bleeding break one's wudu? And the third thing is what is called qalas or reflux of the food. Does that break the wudu? In order to understand the ruling on this issue, we have to kind of discuss a little bit more about what is the vomit and what is the qalas or the reflux. The reason we have to do this is because the ulama that say, there's a group of ulama that say, any impurity that comes out of the body from whatever place, this is going to break the wudu. Any impurity. If it comes out from the two places, it breaks the wudu. Even if the blood, if it comes out from a different place, it breaks the wudu. So the question is about the vomit. When a person, they have the vomit, is it an impurity or is it pure?
Impure.
Okay, the question, somebody might say food is pure, right? We ate the food, it's pure. How did it become impure? And in order to understand why it became, if it becomes impure or not, we have to look at the change that took place to the food. When the food enters the stomach, is it simply just a mechanical motion that moves the food around and breaks it down? Or is there some something released from the body, some type of fluid released by the stomach that causes the food to break down. Which one is it? It's both of them, actually. The stomach is moving around, moving the food, but then also there's glands in the stomach that release acid, and that acid, it causes a change in the food. So the food is no longer just simply food. It's actually changing to something new. That process of change, when it goes under that process, this is where, why the scholars say that the food, after it is entered into the stomach, if it comes out, it's become something impure. Because it's changed. It's not the original form. Just like we talk about sometimes, can things change from being pure to impure? Can something be pure and then become impure? What's an example? Can you think of an example? What about grape juice? Right? If you have grape juice, it's pure, right? But what happens when you ferment it? What does it become? Wine. Is wine pure?
No.
Becomes impure, right? So the food, it also, it started out pure, but due to the changing in the stomach, it became impure. Okay, so now that we understand this, that the food, it became impure, so the vomit is returning this impurity or exiting it from the body, causing the vomit or causing the food to come out of the body. And so this is one of the things talked about in the hadith. When that food comes out, it's breaking, it causes the wudu to break, according to the hadith. Vomiting, it breaks the wudu, according to the hadith. And then we'll talk about if all the scholars agree with this hadith or not. But the hadith is teaching us this ruling. The second thing mentioned was the what is called qalas, or reflux. Reflux, vomit is when the food ejects very swiftly and quickly. But reflux is actually when a person, they eat a lot of food, especially spicy food, they drink a lot of water with that food. They don't follow the sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ. They don't leave one third for breathing. Everybody knows that hadith, right? Ramadan is coming in a few months, so we have to start getting ready for it. One third is supposed to be left for air, to breathe. If somebody overfills their stomach, especially with water, at the end, what happens? Some of that acid, what does it do? It comes into the throat. This is called the reflux of the food. It doesn't gush out, but a person, they feel like their stomach is in their throat. This is a result of drinking too much fluid and too much food. And so that reflux is called qalas in Arabic. And this hadith is mentioning that. That the qalas, it is overfilling, it is when the stomach is overfilled. Person, they ate too much, and then that reflux comes in the mouth. This is also something that, according to this hadith, it is being mentioned here. And the third thing mentioned in the hadith is the bleeding. The bleeding. The nose bleeding is mentioned, ru'af. And the nose bleeding, subhanAllah, the doctors, the scholars, they mention that there are 12 different arteries that meet in the nose. Where the nose, where we detect the smell, there's 12 arteries. And this is why any injury or any poking to the nose, it causes the blood to gush out. Some young people, this is more common in teenagers, and especially in dry weather and hot weather, what happens? Sometimes one of those arteries, it breaks and the blood gushes out from all of those different arteries in the nose. The only solution, sometimes they have to cauterize it with something hot to close those or seal the arteries. So this blood, when it comes out, it's also being mentioned in this hadith. If somebody has the blood in their nose, then they should leave the salah and make wudu. This is what is mentioned in the hadith. Now, the blood, it doesn't only come from the nose, it could come from the hand, come from the foot. Do all of these things break the wudu or not? Now this is the question we come to. The vomit, the reflux, the nosebleed, the madhi we already talked about. Everybody agrees that it breaks the wudu. But these three things, if a person vomits, does it break their wudu? If a person bleeds, does it break their wudu or not? This is the question. Now we have two views amongst the ulama. We have the view of Imam Abu Hanifa, rahimahullah, and Imam Ahmad. What do they say? Imam Abu Hanifa, he tells us, he says that if an impurity comes out from any part of the body. This is the condition. An impurity, that's the first condition. It has to be an impurity. If it's sweat, it doesn't break the wudu, right? So number one, if it's an impurity. Number two, it comes out of the body. It leaves its place. Blood, we have blood in our body, it's impure, but it didn't leave its place. So it doesn't break the wudu, right? And number three, if it comes out in a large amount, then what happens if these three conditions are fulfilled? What happens to the wudu is broken. Okay, I'll mention the three conditions again so we can understand Imam Abu Hanifa's view. One, it's an impurity, something that's impure. Number two is that it comes outside of its normal place, like the food coming out of the stomach. Food is in the stomach. Does it harm our wudu? It doesn't harm our wudu. But if it comes out of its normal place, then, and if it comes out in how much? It has to be a large quantity, not a tiny amount, a large quantity. When these three conditions happen, what happens to the wudu, according to Abu Hanifa? Then the wudu is broken. Okay, so this is what Abu Hanifa mentioned. And what is a large amount? A large amount, he said, there's some of the ulama, they say a large amount is more than the size of a coin. So somebody has a little cut, a tiny bit of blood, then it doesn't nullify the wudu. You see that? He said the size of a coin. A dirham, which is a round silver coin. Some of the ulama, they said, no, it even has to be more than that, like a handful. So somebody, they vomit, but a small amount, and it's less than a handful, it does not break the wudu. Some of them, they said, whatever appears to be a large amount in the sight of an observer. But generally, I mean, the overall rule is it has to be a large amount, not a tiny bit. Not a pinprick, a little drop of blood. He doesn't consider that breaking the wudu. It has to be a large amount. Same thing with a vomit. It has to be not a little bit, somebody had a little tiny bit of vomit, but a large amount, more than a handful, or more than the size of a coin. This is a good question because some brothers, they asked me, they had a tiny nosebleed or a little bit of blood in the nose. Do they have to go and renew their wudu or not? So if we know this condition, that it has to be more than the size of a coin, it makes things easier. Okay, so that's the main view of who? Which Imam? Abu Hanifa and Imam Ahmad, he also says that in one narration. The other view, which is the view of the majority of scholars, is that these things, like vomit or blood, any impurity coming out of the body, it does not break the wudu. Unless it comes out from the two private parts. Other than that, the bleeding coming from the hand, from the nose, the vomit coming out, none of these things break the wudu. This is the view of Imam Malik, Imam Shafi'i, and one of the narrations of Imam Ahmad. They said that any impurity coming out other than from the two private parts, it does not affect the wudu whatsoever. Okay, so this group of ulama, what is your proof? The hadith is right here. How do they respond to this? That Imam Malik, he mentions many hadith, more than four or five hadith. The Sahaba, they're describing Ibn Umar, he had a pimple on his face and he was praying and he pressed it and the blood came out. So he took the blood and he flicked it away and he continued praying. There's another hadith that was narrative also that he had a nosebleed and he took the blood and he threw it away and then he continued in his prayer. And there's another Sahabi or Tabi, his name is Sayyid ibn Musayyib. He says that it's narrated what he did, he got a nosebleed and he laid down, he was praying. He got a nosebleed, so he laid down on his back, and that causes the blood to stop flowing. Then he went and he washed the blood off from his nose, and he came back and he started praying. And it didn't mention that he performed any new wudu. Okay, so this is, they have also narrations. Imam Malik, he has these many different narrations. Also, they have a very strong proof. This is a very beautiful and interesting proof. You know what cupping is? Brothers, anybody know what cupping is? Hajama, they call it. Anybody did it before? What happens when you do the cupping? What comes out?
Blood.
A little bit or a lot?
It's a lot.
Yes.
We do it back home.
SubhanAllah. Yes.
You put two things, you know, like faith.
Okay, yes. What they do, yes, they cut the skin. Yeah. It's a means of removing the stagnant blood. And it's considered something that causes health. The Prophet ﷺ did it. What they do is they take a vacuum cup, or they take a cup and they heat it up. And then they press it on the skin, and after they cut up the skin a little bit, and then when it cools, it sucks out some of the blood from the body, from the back, or from even on the head, or the arm. So this is called cupping. The Prophet ﷺ, he did the cupping one time. Then he went and he washed the place where the blood came off, and he prayed. He did the cupping, he washed the blood away, and then he prayed right away. And he didn't make wudu. So what does that show us? Does the cupping break the wudu?
No.
Does bleeding in a large amount break the wudu? Did not break the wudu, right? So this is a very strong hadith that proves that even the Prophet ﷺ, he didn't do wudu from the blood coming out, and it was a large amount. So this is what we respond to Abu Hanifa, rahimahullah. How does Abu Hanifa respond to this hadith? He doesn't really have a strong response. So the majority of scholars, they took this hadith and said that bleeding and vomiting does not break the wudu. Is that clear for the two main views of the ulama? Okay, just to finish, one last part of this hadith, which is interesting. It says that in the hadith itself, it says that if somebody has a nosebleed or vomit, he should go and perform wudu and come back and build on the prayer that he already started. This is also a problem with the hadith that shows us that maybe why some of the ulama didn't accept it. When somebody leaves to go perform wudu, does he keep facing the qibla? He's turning away from the qibla. He's going, turning his back to the qibla. He's moving. Is he moving a little bit or a lot? He might have to walk, 100 steps to the bathroom, turning different directions. And moving a lot, does it break the prayer? So how can he come back and build on the prayer if he did all these motions? Right? And then turning away from the qibla, does it break our prayer? Yes. So this also adds to the weakness of the hadith. How can a person leave, go far away, and maybe in those days they had to go very far to make wudu, come back as long as he didn't talk and continue his prayer? So this is one of the things the ulama pointed out, that maybe that's not one of the reasons why they didn't use this hadith. One other thing, if it was an authentic hadith, if we had a strong chain, then there is some hadith that say you can kill a snake and things like that. But, and move around and kill the snake. But this hadith, what did we say in the beginning? Imam Ahmad, he said this hadith is weak hadith. So because the hadith is weak, then most of the ulama, they did not accept it. Especially in this important act of worship, when we want to know how to make wudu properly, we want to build on what is strong. Right? We studied last week, if you remember, that the certainty does not go away by a doubt. So we're certain that we have wudu. Now we have this weak hadith that bleeding breaks the wudu. So does that weak hadith that we don't know if it's authentic or not, at the very best it's doubtful, can that weak hadith break our wudu or cause us to say that we don't have wudu anymore? Certainty is not removed by doubtful things. Do you remember that from last week? An yaqeenu la yirfa bishak. Right? When somebody is certain they have wudu, then we have a doubtful hadith, so we leave the hadith aside. So this is what most of the ulama, or the majority of scholars, they say that bleeding, vomiting, the reflux does not break the wudu. It does not break the wudu. What about the madi, the pre-seminal fluid? Does it break the wudu? It does break the wudu, but not based on this hadith alone. There's another hadith that was very authentic that talked about that it broke the wudu. So I hope this makes it easier for us, because I know a lot of brothers, they have the nosebleeds, and now you know the ruling on that, and also the vomiting. The vomiting, if it's a small amount, then all of the scholars, they agree it doesn't break the wudu. And the bleeding too, if it's a small amount, all of the scholars say it doesn't break the wudu. But if it's a lot of blood, then who says it breaks the wudu? Abu Hanifa. Looks like you're getting late for you, brothers. If it's a lot of blood or a lot of vomit, Abu Hanifa says it breaks the wudu. What does the rest of the imam say? The majority? It doesn't break the wudu, even if it was gallons of blood. It does not break the wudu. Okay, is that clear? Anybody have any questions on this, inshallah? No questions up to here? Okay, khair. Jazakum Allah khairan. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله وصحبه وسلم والحمد لله رب العالمين. I'll leave any room for any other questions related to the subject of wudu. Yes, brother.
Brother, you said one of the requirements it has to be a large amount.
Yes.
What about acid reflux? I mean, how would you know if it's a large amount or not?
Okay, the reflux, again, they said, some of them said more than the size of a coin. So if it's less than that, some of them even said it has to be like a whole fistful. So unless it's a really large amount, then it wouldn't break the wudu according to Abu Hanifa.
Reflux doesn't have anything, you know, it's just a reflux, you know. But it doesn't come out, you know.
When it comes to the mouth, it doesn't have to come out of the mouth, but even if it comes into the mouth, that amount of reflux, this is called qanas in Arabic. Qanas. And Abu Hanifa rahimahullah, he considered that something that breaks the wudu. MashaAllah. Do you get it? You understand? So if it's a small, it would have to come into the mouth, not just in the throat, not in the throat, but it has to come out completely to the mouth. Okay, so maybe if I say reflux, I don't know if that's the exact word in English. In Arabic it's called qalas. It has to reach the mouth. If it's just in your throat or if you feel it moving up and down, it does not affect the wudu. Allahu a'lam. Inshallah. Jazakallah khair for your question. May Allah reward all of you for staying, and inshallah you benefit from the knowledge.